This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. High temperatures and storms are threatening several parts of the country.
It is one hot holiday weekend along the line from West Texas to the Florida Panhandle. And that is not all, says Paul Goodloe at the Weather Channel.
Showers and thunderstorms rolling across Oklahoma and Texas into Arkansas, into Louisiana, into Mississippi, eventually Alabama, and more storms here across Florida.
So there were widespread power outages Saturday night in parts of Texas and Louisiana, and tornado warnings in Texas and Oklahoma.
CBS's Tom Foti. Switzerland is holding a referendum on measures to achieve net zero carbon emissions by 2050. The BBC's Imogen Folks is in Bern.
If global warming continues at the current rate, the ice caps will be gone in decades. The new proposals would invest more than $3.5 billion helping businesses and households to switch to climate-friendly renewables.
Several people have been shot just outside an electronic dance music festival in Washington State.
Police say the shooting happened at the Beyond Wonderland EDM Festival in George, Washington at the Gorge Amphitheater. Around 8:30 last night, someone began shooting into a crowd at the area where people were camped out for the weekend festival.
CBS's Matt Piper says police have arrested one suspect. A new report from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence reveals the federal government is buying Americans' information from data brokers. CBS's Elaine Quijano has that story.
Most of it is sold by vendors claiming the data is anonymous. But experts argue in today's digital world, it is easy to reveal personal information. Some of the information being collected includes geolocation, your web browsing and consumer habits, and demographic information.
Let's talk about facial recognition technology. This year, the TSA plans to expand the use of the digital identification program.
Most images are deleted after use, but some information is encrypted and retained for up to 24 months as part of the ongoing review of how the technology performs. Privacy advocates worry about the lack of regulations around facial recognition and its tendency to be less accurate with people of color.
CBS's Chris Van Cleve says the program is already in place at over 24 airports. Tomorrow is Juneteenth, a day that celebrates the emancipation of enslaved people in Galveston on June 19, 1865. WUSA-TV reporter Randy Ayala is in Washington, D.C.
Locals and visitors were able to submerge themselves in an interactive history lesson at the National Museum of African American History and Culture.
I've been trying to come here since it opened, and I just never worked out the timing, and obviously it's the perfect weekend to do it.
This is CBS News.
Hiring's a lot easier with Indeed. Their powerful platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The law firm of Gingras, Thompson & Walks has a track record of making life-changing, positive differences for their clients. $5.25 million to a woman who suffered brain injuries and her husband passed away when struck by a drunk driver. $1 million to three different individuals injured by drunk drivers. $1 million settlement to a man injured in a motorcycle accident. Call Gingras, Thompson & Walks, 855-954-1186.
All in to win, Gingras, Thompson & Walks, GTWLawyers.com.
It's June Dairy Month, and though more than 5 million people call Wisconsin home, we share our state with close to 1.5 million cows. Those beautiful animals. Yes, okay, I grew up on a dairy farm outside of Green Bay. They've been here since before we became a state. Can you answer this? Most of our cows' milk currently makes which product? Is it butter, cheese, or ice cream? The answer coming up. Wisconsin's first official milk plant, 1894 in the Waupun area of Fond du Lac County. Fast forward more than 120 years, now farmer-owned with a second location in the Outagamie County village of Black Creek, the Saputo plant is even featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels for its award-winning cheesemaking. So did you guess? Most of our cow's milk, 90% of it currently makes cheese. Gouda for you. Join us in thanking our farmers by celebrating June Dairy Month. For the Civic Media Network, I'm Terry Barr.
Apple pie, fireworks, parades, red, white, and blue. Civic Media loves 4th of July, and we hope you do too. Would your business benefit from reaching hundreds of thousands of radio listeners? Show your American pride by helping sponsor radio promos, celebrating Independence Day, listing safe fireworks displays, and honoring military veterans. If your business would like to be involved, email your name and phone number to info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trudy Olson has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
So much waiting for me. Yeah, I wanna go outside. I wanna be.
We're here.
Whoa, that was fast.
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
I've been a tireless public servant for over a decade. Before that, worked nearly 6 years on Wall Street. I'm an economist, a lawyer, and somebody who cares deeply about whether or not what our politicians are doing make each of our lives better. Come tune in to The Maggie Dawn Show, where those who know want to go.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Mondays through Thursdays at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Tap.
Other things, too. I've seen her in the community for quite a few years here and working on theater and things like that. But at first, Wendy, wow, we have another smoke alert here.
Yeah, I feel like I just left New York where it was crazy. And now I'm here in St. Paul and the weather's really bad. Yeah, so there is an air quality alert. We're at 189 right now. Yep, which is unhealthy. And according to the experts, the air quality index, green is good. That's number 0 to 50. Mm-hmm. And that means that the air quality is satisfactory and the air pollution poses little to no risk. Yellow means moderate, from 51 to 100. That means that the air quality is acceptable. However, there may be some risk for some people, particularly those who are unusually sensitive to air pollution. Orange is unhealthy for sensitive groups, which is 101 to 150. So members of sensitive groups may experience health effects. The general public is less likely to be affected. And right now we are in the red. Wow. We're in red at 189, so this is unhealthy, mm-hmm. and this goes from 151 to 200. So some members of the general public may experience health effects. Members of sensitive groups may experience more serious health effects. Then it goes to purple, which is very unhealthy, 201 to 300. And I did see that there were some parts of Minnesota, like St. Cloud, who were in the purple. That's very unhealthy. Health alert, the risk health effect is increased for everyone. Mm-hmm. And then maroon color, which is hazardous, and this is 301 and higher. So health warning of emergency conditions, everyone is more likely to be affected. So those are the air quality index numbers and what they mean. And I think that this is happening more and more.
Well, you know, we have over 400 and some fires in Canada, mm-hmm. and it's climate change to the max here. Yep. And I hope we don't have to get used to this, because this is like, you know, I go for an early morning walk, Wendy, yeah. and I could not go. And I saw the orangeness of the sun, and mm-hmm. I knew that that meant it's smoky out. Mm-hmm.
It is very smoky, and it has gotten worse from this morning till now, just by the numbers. Yeah. And you could see it outside.
Oh.
You know, we were just...
Smell it.
Yeah, you could smell it. I know my eyes are bothering me, and I'm feeling a little bit, like in my throat, I could feel it in my mm-hmm. throat. So
I just got this off of Fern's Facebook, who will be on in just a minute here.
Yeah.
Due to the current air quality, all outdoor programming in Minneapolis parks are canceled today, June 14th, 2023. Cancellations include music and movies and park events, athletic field rentals, events and outdoor activities for youth and adults. That is insane.
It is insane. And later on in the program, for the sacred animal section, yeah. I'm going to be talking about how this air quality affects pets and our wildlife.
Yeah,
so
please
stay tuned for that.
Please
yeah.
do. Hey, why don't we grab our guest here, Wen, and a griller on what's going on. But hey, Fern, welcome to Native Roots Radio. It's so great to have you on. Dakota culture educator, Wakan Teepee, really great to have you. And I've known you as a theater person too. So telling stories and being in theater are really closely knitted.
Hamidakiapi, hello. My name is Fern Naomi Renville, and I'm so grateful for the invitation to join you this afternoon, Robert.
Yeah.
And
yes.
I am sorry about the smoke. It sucks. It does.
It really does. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about you and maybe Wakan Teepee. We get some updates, because I know some magical things are happening with the organization you're with, and I'd like to know what's been going on. So take it away, Fern.
Well, that's a lot to talk about, because we are doing some really amazing things at Wakan Teepee, including our new name change, Wakan Teepee, Oyakapi, the ones who look over Wakan Teepee. And this matches a new, what's it called? Not the charter, but the board directive that mm-hmm. States that Wakan Teepee will be Native led, so mm-hmm. that it will have a Native majority board and Native leadership as an organization. So that's a big deal, mm-hmm. because Wakan Teepee started out as Lower Phelan Creek Project, which was a non-Native environmental nonprofit started essentially by white homeowners who wanted to improve their property values, but who learned about the significance of the site that is known as Bruce Vento Nature Sanctuary, the place known as Wakan Teepee that is the host to the caves in the bluffs, mm-hmm. and the burial mounds and cemetery on top. When those homeowners learned about the significance of this Dakota site, they looked to Dakota people for consultation and guidance. And then they looked to Dakota people for partnership. And then 4 years ago, they decided that Dakota leadership was what was really needed in the stewardship of this site. And that's what's happened. So those non-Native people have stepped away from leadership positions and supported Indigenous people moving into those leadership positions. I don't know that I've ever actually heard of that happening before.
Wow, yeah.
So it's a form of land back. And it's also, I think, incredibly encouraging both for Native people who are working around sacred site restoration like this, but also non-Native people who are interested in looking at ways to be a part of the repair.
Fern, that repair started a few years ago. I heard there were tons and tons, and it's by railroad tracks, of earth brought in there to protect.
Yeah, I remember Maggie came on the show and was talking about how polluted it was, and people were using it as a dumping ground, and there was old, you know, toilets and, you know, tubs, bathtubs, and all kinds of tires and all kinds of debris that people would just use it as a dumping ground. And now it's a beautiful, like a prairie garden.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And Fern, I've been down there with students that, I've been down there with students too that we've been planting sage and berries and things like that. So it's restoration has just been unbelievable.
Robert, I was thinking of you and your students because I was down there in 2018 watching your class plant sage. And just this year, I was there recently with Hope Flanagan, and she was pointing out that all the plants that are called phytoremediators, things that grow in contaminated soils and that tend to indicate contamination, that there's less of those and there's more Native plants showing up.
Wow.
So, I'd like to hear more about that when we come back, Fern.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. Excellent. Hey, we're with Fern and Naomi Renville, and we're talking about the Wakan Teepee, and I'm not good with the last part, the new part. You'll have to help us with that, with the Dakota word. But hey, we'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Stay with us.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Know anybody who's been an economist, a lawyer on Wall Street, but is from just down the street? Worked in the public sector for over a decade? Won a rugby national championship and played in Carnegie Hall? Well, I do. It's me. Come tune into The Maggie Dawn Show, where those who know want to go.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Mondays through Thursdays at 6 p.m. on your local civic media radio station and on the civic media app. The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Minnesota 350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Hey, we're here with Fern, and we're talking about Wakan Teepee. And Wendy, you kind of we were talking during the break. You kind of have a little question.
Well, I was really curious. Your last statement, Fern, about certain plants that grow in like bad soil or soil that really, and now there's less of those, so the soil is becoming, I guess, healthier. Could you tell us a little bit more about that? That's really fascinating to me. I didn't know that.
Hope's awesome too.
Oh, I think you're muted.
You're a mute.
Fern, I come home with so much knowledge.
Go ahead. You were muted. Go ahead, Fern.
Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. Just saying that every time I go out with Hope, I learn so much. But so to be clear, we haven't tested this year, mm-hmm. and it's been a few years since we tested the soil, at which point we did see that it was pretty contaminated with like heavy metal. So we haven't actually tested to follow up on this anecdotal observation that there are more plants coming up that indicate that the soil is becoming cleaner. So I'll have to confirm that with you, but I also do like the plants are they're really good indicators of what's going on there. And we literally have been seeing so many new things showing up. I know that over the course of the last 10 years, that piece of land is almost unrecognizable. The cleanup efforts and the restoration of plant and the controlled burns have done so much to reduce invasives, reduce disease, reduce pests. And so that is another big piece of the soil health too, is that the method of prescribed burning, which is a way of enriching the soil and purifying and cleansing, is was one of those last surviving pieces of oak savanna along the river that traditionally were managed and evolved to co-adapt with fire. So those need fire.
Wow, that's awesome to know. Let everybody know, because we're all over the country now, Fern. We're a little more popular than the last time you were on the show. We're on 18 other stations across Turtle Island. Let people know how close it is to the river and kind of where it is exactly.
So the site known as Wakan Teepee is basically the floodplain, or it used to be a floodplain before the Mississippi River was dammed, where the Mississippi and Minnesota rivers come together. That confluence is a floodplain that was incredibly rich. It was a food basin, and it was a place where Dakota people traditionally returned to seasonally. We had a semi-permanent village named Kapoja, meaning the ones who travel light, that was right across the river. So Wakan Teepee encompasses what's now called Dayton Bluffs. The original Dakota name for this site is Imnajaska, the White Cliffs or White Bluffs, the place of White Bluffs. Although there's also some people who say that it is the water that carries the stone from the White Bluff. But in any case, bluffs that overlook that estuary, this place where these two rivers come together, that was also one of the most significant burial sites. So there are still surviving mounds atop the bluffs, and those mounds are active sacred burial mounds that we are wanting to see become classified as a cemetery and placed on the National Historic Register. And that is part of a future vision. But this site is of particular significance, not just because it is where we brought ancestors and placed our ancestors' remains there in our mounds. And our ancestors' remains are still there in the mounds. But the cave, Wakan Tipi Cave, mm-hmm. in the bluff, was used for ceremony and meeting purposes, including as a place of birthing for Dakota mm-hmm. women. And there is a spring inside the cave that is considered sacred and runs year round. And previously, when this was in use as a sacred place, there were petroglyphs inside the cave depicting figures like Unktehi, the water spirit, and the Wankia, the thunder beings, and other spiritual entities. These petroglyphs were destroyed after the removal of Dakota people from the mm-hmm. Twin Cities. And then that sacred cave was made into a storage place for beer by mm-hmm. a brewery.
All right.
So at that point is when it started, the larger site started to be used as a informal dump. There were the railroad yards nearby. Right. It has been a shanty town and homeless encampment for almost 100 years. So there has been a lot of neglect and degradation happening there. So to see it now, mm-hmm. to see that year by year, this site has been recovering and healing, and not because people are ignoring it or leaving it alone, but because people are paying attention to it. Because Dakota people are leading this, learning about the site and coming back and becoming familiar again with this place, becoming intimate again with this place. So this village, Kapoja, where Dakota women lived and grew food in the summertime, this was a site that produced food that kept alive settlers. So when the first fur trappers, missionaries, military people, explorers, all those people came here, there's many written historical accounts talking about how the people survived because they depended on Dakota women for corn. Mm-hmm. So Dakota women grew corn. Dakota women are Minnesota's first farmers. And we grew corn in mound gardens, our three sisters' gardens, mm-hmm. there right across the river from where we are now at Wakan Tipi. So those mound gardens that were grown by women, like I said, they sustained the early settlers too. But as you know, the state of Minnesota did not view Dakota people as farmers. And as far as the settlers were concerned, only what men did was of significance. So for instance, if you read anything and everything about Dakota people in 100 years of newspaper coverage from the Twin Cities, you will never read anything about Dakota women farmers. You will read all about the savage barbarian men who are nomads and hunters, blah, blah, blah. And it's true, they weren't farmers because Dakota men did not farm. Now, the settlers saw that Dakota women were farming, and they assumed that farming then was a menial work for women, and that women were made to do this heavy menial work. But in fact, women did do the farming, not because it was menial labor, but because it was sacred work that was valued. Mm-hmm. And so Dakota men did not do the farming because that was not men's work. They had their own sacred roles to protect and care for women and families, but they were not farmers. That was the sacred work of women. With our power to bring forth life with our bodies, we are associated with the power to bring forth food from the body of Mother Earth. Mm. Our Dakota people had gardening societies for women. And we grew all kinds of produce here that people don't imagine, like pumpkins and watermelons. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when people like Samuel Pond came and saw Dakota women farming across the river from what is now Wakan Tipi, they devalued the work of Dakota women farmers. And they literally said, these Dakota women, all they do is do subsistence farming and sustain only their own families. They make no profit. So through a lens of sustainability, then Dakota farming was incredibly sustainable. Through the lens of capitalism, Dakota farming, there was no surplus and there was no profit, and therefore it was useless and of no value. Never mind that it had sustained countless generations of Dakota people. Yeah. So this is the hidden story that can be found at Wakan Tipi, among many other hidden stories. The story of Indigenous women losing our social power and clout when we lost our roles as caretakers of earth and garden.
Hey, Fern, let's talk a little bit more about that in the next segment. I also like to bring up the fact, too, that there's three burial mounds in Mounds Park, but at one time there were hundreds up there, and there's only three left. But this is great listening.
I'm finding this so interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Fern, we're going to have you on another segment here. We got to take a quick break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Stay with us.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
CBS News Brief. They're opening up cooling centers from Houston to New Orleans as steamy hot temperatures are settling in. Paul Goodloe is at the Weather Channel.
You're really going to start turning back on the broiler here, heating up the skies, temperatures at or above 100. When places like Houston get above 100 degrees in June, you know it is crazy hot.
Several people have been shot just outside a music festival in Washington State.
Two people were killed, three others hurt. DJ Afrojack, who's slated to perform tonight, tweeted out a broken heart emoji.
That's CBS's Matt Piper. Tomorrow is Juneteenth. It celebrates the emancipation of enslaved people in Galveston, Texas in 1865. KWCH-TV's Joe Baker on celebrations in Wichita, Kansas.
A Juneteenth gospel concert is slated for Sunday night. Many food and drink vendors are located throughout McAdams Park for those in attendance to enjoy through the Juneteenth holiday Monday.
CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
We'll be moving to the afternoon, Monday through Friday, 1 until 3. Trigvi Olsen has graciously agreed to follow us into the afternoon. We're going to get to talk about the Lincoln Project and politics in Wisconsin, all across the state of Wisconsin.
I know, isn't that exciting? Where the beer is cold, the cheese curds are squeaky, the Harleys roar, the Eagles soar, and the Packers score, Todd.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Do you get sick of the news? Wonder what it's all about and why it matters to you? Tired of the talking heads? Want to move beyond talking points? For those that want to know, there's only one place to go, and that's the Maggie Dawn Show. Come listen to a pragmatist that gets beyond the politics.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Mondays through Thursdays at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Native American Community Clinic in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Yes, it is, and they do. Hey, we're here with Fern and Naomi Renville, and she is the Dakota Cultural Educator for Waukon Tipi, and we've been just mesmerized over here with stories about the area down by the river there in the caves and the mounds, Wendy. It's just been an amazing show. Fern, thank you so much for coming on and educating our listeners about what's happening here in the Twin Cities, St. Paul, and with this sacred area.
Thanks again for the opportunity to talk about this. You mentioned the mounds and the fact that right now there are still some large visible mounds up on top of the bluffs. Earlier years, there used to be 80 of them, 80 of those big mounds. They weren't removed so much as flattened, and some bodies were removed, but most of the remains are actually still there. And furthermore, something a lot of people don't know is that the mounds are an active cemetery, and there has been at least one interment there of remains that were found elsewhere and were rematriated to Sistan Wahpeton. And I believe it was from a you'd have to ask Frankie Jackson about this, but there was, I believe, a construction site or some sort of something that happened down by Lower Sioux where human remains were found and determined to be from Sisseton. And so those remains were taken to the mounds and placed there. And so this is an active cemetery. Also, there's so much myth around the mounds for many years. And in fact, I've seen them still in textbooks that are out there. It was said that a people called the Hopewellian culture had built these mounds. And these were a sophisticated group of people who were killed off by the savage barbarian Sioux. So just like this bizarre fantasy story that was also just like, talk about being gaslit. But an interesting thing about those mounds, Robert, is that they're not just piles of like soil pushed into a mound. They're actually very intentionally constructed mounds built out of layers of sand and clay from the river bottom. And they're over 2,000 years old. So my Dakota ancestors brought the sand and clay up from the river bottom and up to the bluffs. And that's like 80 mounds. It was a lot of work.
Right.
A lot of intention went into those mounds. And as you know, they're not actually currently classified as a cemetery it's still Mounds Regional Park.
Right.
And it's really only been in recent years that the playground was removed, and there's now fences around the mounds and signage saying this is a cemetery. Right. But it's still something that remains to be done here is for our federal government, our state government, and our city government to all recognize this as an active cemetery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Fern, I remember, seeing postcards too. There were trails on top of these mounds. And also, before the fences were up, I know people, children played on these burial sites.
Yes. So there, in the last century, there are some extremely sad stories of how mounds were desecrated and became entertainments, and you could go and dig in a burial mound for a day and, you know, find artifacts and take them home.
Right.
So this is a process of education.
Right.
And the fact that Wakan Tipi is about to break ground on the first ever Dakota Cultural Interpretive Center that will be in the Twin Cities again since the removal of Dakota people. That's a significant moment.
The fact
that Wakan Tipi itself exists, I feel like right now is a pivotal moment where the erasure of Dakota people is starting to be erased. But I have to say, I still go to Native conferences here in the Twin Cities, mm-hmm. where keynote speakers don't even mention the word Dakota or Dakota people. So we are still very erased here. And 90% of Dakota people still live outside of the state. So I occupy a place of extreme privilege as a Dakota person who is being allowed to reconnect with my homeland, because that's the majority of Dakota people, once again, are not living here in our homelands.
So talking about you as a Dakota culture educator, that is your job, right, is to educate and especially people that live up there. A lot of people I know, they were trying to put a splash pad in there a few years ago, and we were protesting that. The people that live up on the bluff do not really know and understand the rich history of that area in which they live.
This is true. However, I will say that the founders of Lower Phalen Creek Project, once again, who are all non-native homeowners from right there, mm-hmm. that group of people are real champions and allies, and they're mm-hmm. instrumental in changing the tide up there on the bluffs. So it is happening. Mm-hmm. I am noticing a shift. I'm literally noticing a shift. In the residents of that neighborhood, but also in city government and state government, people are starting to understand. And so this is a moment of consciousness raising and the reversal of the erasure of Dakota people. I feel incredibly fortunate to be here at this moment, Robert, because I'm mm-hmm. kind of stepping into this role at a time when my predecessors have done all the hard work. They kind of teed it up really sweet for me so that as we're breaking ground and as this role opens up, that I could be the first person in this role. So I feel very privileged, and I feel very invested in making sure that other Dakota people have access to Wakan Tipi and know about it and understand it as a place where, as Dakota people, we can come and reconnect with this land and have a place where we belong.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
Oh, I gotta say, this summer is our first ever Wakan Tipi youth group, which wow. doesn't have a name because the youth themselves are going to choose the name this summer. But there are going to be a cohort of young sacred site protectors. And so this is a good moment to be here doing this work.
Yeah, it really is. And we just really got to give out to not only your predecessors, but Maggie Lorenz leading the way in these last few years and really putting this together and in a really, really good way.
Maggie is a leader. Maggie, this is all Maggie's work. She's literally just getting to a point right now where she can sit back a little bit and turn some of the work over to the team that she's built now. Mm-hmm. But literally, yeah, exactly. It's amazing to see what she has accomplished in 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had a groundbreaking for the building, didn't we, last year? Yeah, so things are moving really quickly, and it's exciting that you know, Lakota, Dakota, and all the things that come with it, whether it's Badote, which means the two waters merging, the Minnesota and the Mississippi, and all those things that are owed to the first people here.
Yes. Yes. And also, Wakan Tipi is going to be a site where land-based outdoor education is what we're interested in developing for, especially for our young people. And so climate change, yeah. We're talking about climate change and cultivating a group of young people who are intimate with this land and know her and will fight for her and will be acting on all this inherited wisdom to protect these places and restore them.
Definitely. Hey, I want to, before I forget, which I've already forgotten, is there a place, Facebook, website, and how do people get a hold of you, Fern, if they want somebody to come in and talk about this great project?
Mm-hmm. Well, you can go and find us on the internet, wakantipi.org. We do have a Facebook page here too. And I should mention that I'm also one of the Native artists in residence at the Minnesota Historical Society this year. And wow. I actually just got back from Mille Lacs, where I was looking at nettle fishing nets there. So I'm going to be weaving a traditional Dakota fishing net with community, including our youth, this wow. fall. And that will be a part of what I'm doing publicly and inviting folks to join me. So if you go to the website, you will see, for instance, there's the Pollinator Festival on August 6th is an opportunity for the public to come and learn both from myself and our youth about nettle weaving, bulrush, other plants that women used for weaving and fiber uses. I didn't know, Robert, that Dakota people were weavers. I didn't know that growing up. I wanted to be a weaver so bad. Wow. And I didn't know that we had our own weaving tradition. So it's really been as an adult that I've discovered my identity as a plant person, because I just didn't grow up with that knowledge. And it's for a reason. The fact that we were removed from our woodland homelands and placed out on the prairie in South Dakota. So I'm grateful to be here at this moment, getting to know and love and be with my homelands again.
Wow, what a great way to end it. Thank you so much, Fern. Really appreciate you stopping in. We got to do this again very soon. A lot of knowledge, Wendy, mm-hmm. That we got schooled today. And it's great.
So much information. And I just want to reiterate what Nina said is thank you for sharing the history and the hope. I think it's so important.
Yes. Thank you,
absolutely.
Fern. Thank you, Fern, for stopping in. And really great. We'll see you soon. Thank you.
Daksha. See you later.
All right. That was Fern Revel, Dakota culture educator of the Wakan Tipi Project. We'll be right back with our sacred animals section, Wendy.
Stay with us.
Ho-wa.
Mm-hmm. It's June Dairy Month, and though more than 5 million people call Wisconsin home, we share our state with close to 1.5 million cows. Those beautiful animals. Yes, okay, I grew up on a dairy farm outside of Green Bay. They've been here since before we became a state. Can you answer this? Most of our cows' milk currently makes which product? Is it butter, cheese, or ice cream? The answer coming up. Wisconsin's first official milk plant, 1894 in the Waupun area of Fond du Lac County. Fast forward more than 120 years, now farmer-owned with a second location in the Outagamie County village of Black Creek, the Saputo plant is even featured on History Channel's Modern Marvels for its award-winning cheesemaking. So did you guess? Most of her cow's milk, 90% of it currently makes cheese. Gouda for you. Join us in thanking our farmers by celebrating June Dairy Month. For the Civic Media Network, I'm Terry Barr.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1, U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl! Wow, that's a good, healthy howl by us three. That was a good one. We could record that and just play that one over.
It's a good pack. Good, hey, wolf pack.
I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy, again. And Wendy does our sacred animal portion of the show. And again, you've been doing this for over 7 years, and I've learned so much. And Pini Gigi, Wendy, for being on.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, everybody. My name is Hanaji Hihani. That means cares for them. I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajinga, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. And it's always my pleasure to do that. And right after the show, I have a meeting with HSUS, so I'm looking forward to that and finding out what we're working on next.
Well, it's great too, and I just have to mention that your name is Ho-Chunk. It's a Ho-Dok, so
yeah,
that's awesome.
Ho-Chunk name, yes, given me by Curtis.
Yep.
So yeah, so we were talking about earlier the air quality and what's going on, and it's really crazy. I just checked right now, and we at 4:30 today, we were at 179, which is unhealthy, and right now we're at 189. That's Jesus. The air quality index. I don't know if it's going to go up or not. It may stay the same. But we're supposed to be in this condition until Friday morning, they said.
What?
So we have to be careful. Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit before I get into the fires and the smoke that we're dealing with right now and the forest fires. But what Fern was saying about how forest fires are really good for ecosystems.
Right. Controlled fires.
Yeah. Controlled fires. Exactly. And some forest fires as well. But in many ecosystems, wildfires are nature's way of regenerating the earth, allowing important nutrients to re-enter the soil and creating new habitats for plants and animals to thrive. Mm-hmm. However, are, if wildfires burn too long or they're too big,
right,
or they're out of control and then nobody can stop them, the ecosystems can struggle to recover.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're having now in the United States. All the fires in California that we've had in the past years, the ones that are going on now in Canada.
Jeez.
2020, there was an awful wildfires in Australia.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? I just read something that it killed over 480 million plants and animals, and that didn't include. Yeah, it was really terrible.
I remember that.
It's really bad. But, you know, the air quality right now, like we talked about earlier, you can't go out for a walk. You and I like to take a walk every day, just a healthy, you know, fast kind of get your cardiovascular system going and walk down to the river and walk around. And we can't do that today because it affects us terribly, our eyes, our throats, and it also affects wildlife, right? We can't expect our pets to and our wildlife to feel anything different than we do, right?
Exactly.
So there's some sites that are just saying, you know, keep your pets indoors as much as possible with the doors and windows shut. What do people do when it's, you know, this hot out and their doors and their windows are shut and they have no air conditioning? It's terrible. It's really bad. Bring your outdoor pets. I don't believe in outdoor pets. I think all pets should be indoor pets. So bring your outdoor pets indoors to a room with good ventilation. Limit walks to short bathroom breaks and avoid intense outdoor exercise. We saw a couple of people today walking their dogs like pretty intensely.
I know. That was ridiculous. Well, and we saw kids out playing at school,
too. Yeah, I know. Here's something that's really funny. It says birds should not be allowed outside. So I guess if you have a bird as a pet. Birds should not be allowed outside when smoke is present, as they are especially susceptible. So that means all our wild birds out there that we see.
We have the crows and the sparrows and the robins and the blue jays and the cardinals that are in our backyard.
Exactly. So wildlife, as we just said, can experience many of the same negative effects of air pollution that humans do. Damage to respiratory systems is the most common effect on animals, but neurological problems and skin irritations are also common. Plants and crops grow less when exposed to long-term air pollution. So if that's air pollution from stacks and chimneys and all kinds of things, wildfires.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really today before the show. I'm sorry my alarm went off during the show because I watered some stuff outside. Because of this bad air quality, I wanted to just put on the hose a little bit and get, we have two bird baths. I wanted to clean them and refill them. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of water bowls outside that are low to the ground with rocks in them so that other little wildlife could come and get some, you know, drink of water. I'm sure they're going to be thirsty and they're going to need water to drink during this time. So if you can put a little pan of water outside so that the wildlife in your yard can come and clear their throats and drink some water, and maybe the birds will want to take a little bird bath to get all the smoke and sediment that must be landing on them off.
Yeah.
And I set my alarm to shut the hose off, and that's what happened. So I apologize for that. But there's an article here that I have. This is from, it's called Western Fire Chiefs Association. And they talk about the wildfire's effects on animals. And it's really just a horrible thing. So wildlife experience many of the same adverse effects as humans have. We just said that.
Mm-hmm.
When animals are trapped or find themselves directly in the flames' path, it could be a life-threatening situation, which we know. So, we, you know, and this is all global warming. This is happening because of global warming. You know, we're not getting enough rain. Places are really dry and timber is dry and brittle. One spark of a lightning bolt or somebody who doesn't put their fire out, their forest fire out. And, you know, I mean, somebody driving along, smoking a cigarette, throwing it out the window. This is what happens, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But physical injuries could also happen with the animals. Fires can cause physical burns and smoke can also be deadly. Oh, this is what I was saying before. Over 480 million non-human animals are estimated to have been killed during Australia's 2020 bushfires, a figure which does not account for insects, bats, or frogs. So that number, 480 million that died during that 2020 bushfire. Yeah, however, direct physical harm is not the only type of injury that wildlife can inflict. Mm. It's very bad. Plastic burns also, right? So the fires, they come into plastic. Plastic starts burning, resulting in toxins that could run off to the local water supply, right? And the greatest impact of water pollution is felt by the fish. Aquatic. Wow. Yeah. So it all goes